If you want to feed vulnerable kids in South Dakota, it's best to bring patients to peer. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. A bill to cover the gap when families can't pay to feed their kids shows the role of compromise in governance. Plus, the last day of the South Dakota legislative session is typically reserved for the consideration of vetoes. But there are exceptions. Monday, lawmakers approved an additional $8 million to address structural problems with Richmond Lake Dam near Aberdeen. South Dakota Searchlight Editor-in-Chief Seth Tupper joined me for analysis of the final hours of the 2026 legislative session.
Probably the most significant thing that came out of veto day was something that wasn't a veto at all, that the legislature just didn't finish in the main run of their session and they left over to handle on veto day was about $8 million. They decided additional dollars they decided to provide to repair the dam and spillway at Richmond Lake, just upstream on a creek from Aberdeen. And there was some drama over that because there's been several spending bills approved for that over the last few years, and they tally up more than $30 million at this point.
Wow.
But apparently that dam is in pretty bad shape and could cause some pretty disastrous results if it were to fail and send flood water down toward Aberdeen. So they got that done. And then, of course, you know, they took up the two vetoes from the governor, and not surprisingly, since the bills didn't have two-thirds support when they passed originally, they weren't able to override the governor's vetoes on a bill that would have essentially banned lab-grown meat and a bill that would have imposed new regulations on non-medical in-home care, for example, for elderly people or disabled people who hire somebody to help them with things around their home. The lab-grown meat ban, there was some subtlety to that, of course, because the governor did sign a five-year moratorium on lab-grown meat, but he didn't go for the out-and-out ban.
Yeah.
So not too many surprises there.
Can we go back to the Aberdeen dam repair legislation or funding?
Sure.
Is that something they can do on veto day then? Explain that they can go back and just take care of unfinished business and add it to appropriations? How does that work from a procedural standpoint?
Not being an expert, but they did, so yes. Yes, I don't know. But I mean, I don't think, you know, I mean, generally, I think they call it veto day, we call it veto day, but in essence, it's just the last day of session. It just happens to come, you know, a few weeks after the other last day of the session.
Right, right.
So they come back and clean it up. And so, I mean, I think there were some people who groused about that a little bit, and I did hear that in some of the testimony at the end of session on veto day about, you know, well, this isn't appropriate to be dealing with this on veto day, but that never really rose to the level of anything that derailed the bill, and they just did it. And you know, they've done this, I don't remember what issues, but there have been other years, I know, where, you know, there have been some things that they left over till veto day to deal with, so.
Okay, one more day to get the job done. And then after that, you have to call a special session if something else is going to be voted on. Yeah,
yep.
The governor has to call that. Looking at South Dakota Searchlight reporting, and one of the things that you covered was Caden Whitman's bill and the reduced price school meals covering the gap. I want to talk about how interesting it is that a Democrat like Caden Whitman got this bill over. Tell us about the gap in reduced price school meals and what this legislation does, because it could impact a lot of people in the state.
Yeah, and first of all, as you said, you know, kudos to Caden Whitman. What is there? Help me out here. Is there 9 Democrats in the legislature, I think, out of the 105?
I think so.
Thereabouts.
Yeah, something.
So just the idea that a Democrat could get a bill like that passed, convince all those other Republicans, you know, that she needed to vote for it, a Republican governor to sign it, that's no small thing, you know, and it's a bill that she's been working on in various forms for several years, so really quite an achievement for her. But essentially, you know, the federal government has the free and reduced price, you know, school lunch program, and based on income guidelines, if your family is a low enough income, the federal government will pay the entire cost of your meals, and of course that stays unchanged. Those meals are covered, but if you at the next level, if you qualify for reduced price meals, you know, right now families have to pay, I think it's 30 cents for breakfast and 40 cents for lunch, and then if families don't pay that, then schools, of course, have to deal with that, either absorb the cost or do fundraisers or try to get donations from outside. And schools have dealt with this in various ways. Mm-hmm. So this new law then will cover that portion of families who qualify for reduced price meals, who are already getting a portion of their meals covered by the federal government, but have been responsible for the remaining portion. Now the state will step in and pay for that portion. It only is going to cost about $600,000 a year, so not a big thing in terms of the state budget, but pretty welcome to schools, I think, because as we've all seen in so many communities across the state, schools have had a lot of problems with people not paying their lunch bills for their kids, right, whether it's inability to pay or just don't know they're supposed to pay or whatever.
Yeah, and that puts a pressure on the lunch staff to feed or not feed. And, of course, you're going to feed the kids something, and that impacts the school's budgets. I was just at an event this morning where Caden Whitten was at, and she introduced herself as a lunch lady and got a round of applause. So a vegetarian Democrat from Sioux Falls who has no yard.
That's right.
And then no grass on the Ag Committee in Pierre managed to get this one through leadership and compromise, or not compromise, through leadership and collaboration over the line. Interesting.
Yep. And there was, I think, that, you know, you could call it some compromise. You know, in previous years, she had bills where she wanted, you know, she had tried to get the state to cover, everybody's meals, basically, you know, to get something done. She had to keep working on it and eventually come down to this level of let's at least cover the reduced price meals. But I think it's a great example of a principle in the legislature that, you know, a bill that seems to have no chance when it's first introduced, if you keep bringing it back and you keep getting elected, sooner or later, the bill that everybody opposed all of a sudden seems normal to everybody and they vote for it. You know, and we've seen that with many things over the years, and persistence can really pay off in the legislature if you're willing to stay at it.
Yeah, well said. All right, let's talk about voter registration. A lot came out of Pierre. Let's really explain to people what happened, because start with Senate Bill 165, which is an emergency clause and changes things right now, but maybe not in the way that some people are afraid it does. Help us understand what's happening with voter identification for registering to vote.
Yeah, I don't remember the bill numbers, but anyway, what, you know, they did a couple things this year where, you know, they've made it so that, well, I mean, really, it's an accumulation of the past few years of sort of a movement to by people who are basically suspicious and suspect that non-citizens are voting and there's voter fraud happening. Yeah. They've been able to pass a series of laws over the years that have led us to a place finally after this session and going into future elections where if you're newly registering to vote, you're going to have to prove your citizenship in some way. Whereas in the past, you were able to just sign a sworn statement as part of your voter registration that swearing that you were a citizen.
Right.
And, you know, people who are already registered apparently won't have to do anything. But if you're registering for the first time, you're going to have to show some form of documentation that you're a citizen. And they passed a law last year that says that driver's licenses now have to indicate whether somebody is a citizen. So if you've gotten a driver's license since then, presumably, and it says you're a citizen, that'll work as your documentation. But failing that, it'd have to be something like a birth certificate or a passport, or there's a list of other things in the law. And then in tandem with that, you know, the legislature also passed a bill that was signed into law this year that says people can challenge somebody else's voter registration based on suspecting that they're not a citizen. And so that's a really, it'll be really interesting to see how those bills work in tandem and whether they're used. The bill about challenges, the law, it is a little, I would say, has some interesting gray areas in it where, mm-hmm. You know, the law talks about if you're going to challenge somebody and say that you don't think they're a citizen, you need some kind of documentation to prove that, but it doesn't really give a full definition of what that could entail or what that documentation would be. So it's going to be really fascinating to see if people make those challenges, how they attempt to prove them.
Do you know if they'll be documented? Will we be able to ask how many challenges were there and how many were upheld?
That's a great question.
Do you have any idea about transparency?
Yeah, to be found out. I mean, I would it certainly would be my position that if we ask for that from county auditors or from the Secretary of State, that should be something they should be able to tell us.
Yeah.
But as we know about open records and things in South Dakota, you don't really ever know until you ask what the response is going to be.
Right. So to be clear, the challenge has to be in the form of a signed sworn statement and must include what state law describes as, quote, documented evidence. I'm reading from your story on South Dakota Searchlight there. So it's not just a finger pointing thing, but it's a little unclear, if I understand what you're saying, what exactly that evidence might be. What evidence do you need to bring forth to get and the Secretary of State's office or the county auditor to investigate?
And it's going to really put, it really puts a lot of responsibility on the shoulders of the county auditor. For example, one county auditor might have a different idea of what constitutes documentation than another. I mean, there could be some really interesting scenarios here that might have to eventually. I mean, it could be that nobody ever uses this challenge thing, and it just sits there as sort of this law that people forget about. But if it is used, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's going to have to take some litigation to figure out exactly what some of this stuff means and how it can be used and how it can't be used.
So is this like the, protesting in church, making that a felony? When you dig into it, nobody's used it as a misdemeanor, so opponents were arguing it's unnecessary and it's just politicking.
Right.
It's a similar thing where the opponents will say this is probably unnecessary and the proponents will say, well, we need to stop every one non-citizen vote is too many.
Yeah, and apparently according to the Secretary of State's office, we had exactly one non-citizen vote in 2016. if you recall that episode,
yeah.
I think it was last year where there, or maybe it was a couple years ago, but anyway, there was a snafu where some folks that were not citizens but were in the country legally and were therefore able to get a driver's license were somehow registered to vote as they filled out their driver's license and filled out the section about voter registration.
Yeah.
And 273, I think, people, and they ended up removing them, and the Secretary of State's office said one of those people voted in 2016. So, it's just one of those things where we'll have to see what happens going forward because, you have one side saying, well, I mean, you have to be a citizen to vote, and nobody should be against that, and, okay. On the other hand, are people who just merely look like they might not be citizens or something, or are they going to have the right to vote challenged just because of that? And how is that going to impact people's legal ability to vote just because somebody has suspicions about them?
Right.
Raises a lot of serious questions about that.
And other states have tried similar kinds of citizenship, not the challenge part, but the verifying the citizenship status. They had some problems in Kansas. So I guess my question is, do you see this bill being challenged? Do you see these bills being challenged in court?
I would say yes, but, one thing that's fascinating about South Dakota in the last several years is we just don't, a lot of the things that you would think, oh, that's going to go to court, they just don't. And I think partly that's we don't have the kind of infrastructure here of nonprofits and watchdog groups and things like that have the ability and the financing and the standing and the expertise to challenge a lot of these things in courts, where in a lot of other states with bigger population and maybe a more balanced a greater balance politically, they do have that. So it's something that somebody could take to court, whether somebody will or not. I don't know. We see that happen a lot in other states, and it just seems like we don't see a lot of it here.
What's next?
Well, I think for all these voting rights bills, it's a long play. I think, obviously that's going to take a long time to play out, but I am really fascinated to see over the next year and 2 years and 5 years, how this is going to impact voter registration. I mean, we used to have a societal consensus, it seemed like, where we always tried to make it easier to vote. I mean, that wasn't that long ago. We had secretaries of state and legislators and politicians, and just everybody seemed generally to agree that we should always be trying to make it easier for people to vote. Now it's a complete opposite. It seems like the legislature every year passes five or six things that make it harder to vote. You got to think that's going to have an impact on registration and the number of people that are actually participating in the political process. So that's going to be really, really fascinating to watch, and I don't think any of us really know or understand how that's all going to play out and how that's going to influence our elections in the future.
That is Seth Tupper, Editor-in-Chief of South Dakota Searchlight. You can find his team's reporting online at SouthDakotaSearchlight.com. And that is our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.